After the Sabbath, as the first light of the new week dawned, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to keep vigil.
It was so bloody. I couldn't sleep at all last night. All I could see was the blood, the endless blood. He didn't do anything wrong, Mary. He didn't do a bloody thing wrong. Why did they do that to him? He was kind to everybody. He was a good man. Why did they do it? I haven't seen anything that's been happening lately. But he was a friend to everybody. You know what it was? It was the political leaders. That's what it was. Those people would do anything to get rid of him because he challenged their ways. You know, he had a heart for those of us who were poor. He didn't just care about the rich and the mighty. He cared about those of us who were poor. And that made a big difference. And I don't know what to do. Like, we're so powerless. And you know what? Now we're powerless again.
I know it hurts. And I know it's hard, but we have to do this. And we have to feel what we're feeling, and we have to do what we're doing. He would have wanted us to do this.
I don't know. Do you remember when he said to the disciples, do you remember when he was talking with them? And he said something about, what did he say? Something about the third day. He said, this will happen, but in 3 days, you can wipe out the stone, but in 3 days I will go back. Do you remember he said something about that? This is the third day. Do you know what he meant?
I don't know what he meant.
The shadows shift and fly. The whole long day, the air trembles, thick with silence, until finally the footsteps are heard, and the noise of the voice of God is upon us. The Holy One is not afraid to walk on unholy ground. The holy work is done, and the world awaits the dawn of new life.
very real and love under their feet. Death is like that, isn't it? It's like the earth crumbles under your feet. Richard Rohr talks about the darkness of all kinds of deaths that you and I must face. Darkness is a good and necessary teacher, he says. It's not to be avoided, denied, run from, or explained away. First, like Ezekiel the prophet, we must keep the scroll that is lamentation, wailing, and moaning in our belly. And only eventually does it become sweet as honey. By the time most people reach middle age, they've had days where life has lost its meaning. They no longer connect with an inner sense of motivation or joy, and sometimes this even manifests itself as clinical depression and requires a therapist's skilled care and medication. But even if we don't experience that kind of depression, most of us go through a period of darkness, of doubt, and malaise at some point in our life. There's a darkness that we are led into by our own stupidity or sin, the illusion of separation from God, and selfishness when we live into that false sense of ourselves. We have to work our way out of this kind of darkness by brutal honesty, confession, forgiveness, surrender, apology, and restitution. For any of us who have done this work, it simultaneously feels like dying and being liberated. We resist going through the darkness and facing our shadows, so we usually need some help, as the 12-step groups so wonderfully and wisely identify. An accountability partner, a spiritual director, a counselor, often walks with us, our small groups sometimes, to navigate this difficult, ego-humiliating process. But even when we feel alone and that God has abandoned us, we sense that we have been led to this place intentionally. We know we are in liminal space, betwixt and between on the threshold, and we have to stay here in this point of death until we learn something essential. It is still no fun, and filled with doubts and demons of every sort. In the darkness of being held closely by God without our awareness, this is where transformation happens. Death is like that, isn't it?
After the Sabbath, as the first light of the new week dawned, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to keep vigil at the tomb. Suddenly the earth reeled and rocked under their feet as God's angel came down from heaven. Came right up to where they were standing. He rolled back the stone and then sat on it. Shafts of lightning blazed from him. His garments shimmered snow white.
In Jesus, God was given a face and a heart. God became someone we could love. While God can be described as a moral force, as consciousness, as a vibrational energy, the truth is we don't or can't fall in love with abstractions. So God became a person that we could hear, see with our eyes, and touch with our hands. When the face of the other, especially the suffering face, is received and empathized with, it leads to transformation of our whole being. It creates a moral demand on our heart that is far more compelling than laws. Just giving people commandments on tablets of stone doesn't change the heart. It may steal will, but it doesn't soften the heart like an eye-thou encounter can. We are mirrored into life, but not by concepts, but by faces delighting in us, giving us the beloved self-image we can't give ourselves. Love is the gaze that does us in. So now let's listen to a wisdom story that gets at the heart of the process of transformation, the sunflower and the sparrow.
Between an old wooden chest and a rusty washing machine drum, a little sunflower grew. She was surrounded by rubbish and dereliction. She was the only flower for miles around. Why the sunflower should be growing there, of all places, no one knew. The flower was unset, and at night she would dream of lush meadows, of fields of bright flowers where the butterflies flew around her. One day, a bedraggled little sparrow came and perched in front of her and gazed at her, his beak hanging open. "How beautiful you are," he chirped. "Really beautiful." "I'm not," retorted the sunflower sadly. "You should see my sisters. They're 10 times my size. I'm small and ugly. For me, you're the most beautiful of them all," piped the sparrow, and flew away. The bird visited the sunflower every day from then on. And every day the sunflower grew a little taller, and every day her flower became brighter. They became friends. One day the sparrow didn't come, and the next, he didn't come, and the next, the sunflower was very worried. Then one morning when she awoke, she saw the sparrow lying in front of her, his wings outstretched. What a shock it gave her. "Are you dead, my little friend? What happened?" Slowly the bird opened his eyes. "For the last few days, I haven't found anything to eat on the waste of. No, I haven't got any strength left. I've come to you so that I can die close to you." "No, no," cried the sunflower. "Wait, wait just a moment." She lowered her heavy flower head toward it, and a few sunflowers fell to the ground. "Pick them up, my little friend. Strength." The sparrow cracked a few seeds with his hand, blast of energy, and lay still. Exhausted. But the next day he was already feeling strong. He wanted to go to the sunflower and thank her. He was devastated when he saw her. Her yellow flower petals had all gone limp, and her leaves hung down lifelessly. "What's the matter, little sunflower?" He chirped in distress. "Don't be concerned for me," said the sunflower. "My time is over. Do you know what? I always thought that my existence was meaningless here on the waste. But now I know there is a purpose for everything. Even though we can't always understand it. Without you, I would have lost my will to live. And without me, you would have lost your life. And look, there are still plenty of sunflower seeds left on the ground. Leave a few of them behind. And maybe one day, there will be lots of sunflowers here. And lots of bedraggled sparrows will fly around them. Like butterflies." Thank you.
after the Sabbath was the first light of the new week dawn. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to teach Israel at the tomb. Suddenly the earth reeled and rocked under their feet as God's angel came down from heaven. He came right up to where they were standing. He rolled back the stone and then sat on it. Shafts of lightning blazed from him. His garments shimmered snow white. The guards at the tomb were scared to death. They were so frightened they couldn't move. The angel spoke to the women. There is nothing to fear here. I know you're looking for Jesus, the one they nailed to the cross. He is not here. He was raised, just as he said. Come and look at the place where he was placed. Now be on your way quickly and tell his disciples, he is risen from the dead. He is going on ahead of you, Galilee. You will see him there. That's the message. The women, deep in wonder and full of joy, lost no time in leaving the tomb. They ran to tell the disciples. Then Jesus met them, stopping them in their tracks. Good morning, he said. They fell to their knees, embraced his feet, and worshipped him. Jesus said, you're holding on to me for dear life. Don't be frightened like that. Go tell my brothers and sisters that they are to go to Galilee and that I will meet them there.
Something will happen in 3 days. It happened.
God is so amazing. Like, this is real. Jesus is alive.
And he said this would happen, but I didn't know what he meant.
And who could believe that something like this could happen?
The disciples, I don't think they believed us. I think they believed us. I don't think they believed us.
We have to go back and tell them again. This is amazing good news. This changes everything.
The second command gave, he said, love one another as I have loved you. This is the new command. You must love one another. That's what he meant. Love really one. Love one. Well, now what did he say then? He said, go and tell other people they are my disciples and they too should love just like you love us.
Yes.
Well, maybe we should take this. This is such a sign of all the terrible stuff, but maybe we could make it something beautiful. Something that would be living. Something that would give us life. Something that would remind us that out of pain and death comes beauty and wonder and new life. Let's do it.
You are good to me. Thank you.
When Jesus' mother Mary and the other Mary went to the tomb, they went early that morning with fear and great joy. Not just great joy, which is more likely what we would have expected. That is, when we think about the women coming to the tomb on that first Easter and discovering not Jesus' dead body, but the news that he is raised from death and is alive, I'm guessing that most of us imagine that they felt great joy, surprise, perhaps, but mainly joy.
And they did. But Matthew also says fear. Which makes a lot of sense when you think about it just a little longer, because resurrection doesn't simply return Jesus to them, it upends their whole entire existence. Resurrection breaks the rules of nature. Resurrection means that there are no limits, no boundaries you can count on, no laws that you can draw ultimately trust. Because if there is one limit, one boundary and law that we all count on, it's that of death. For in all our life and experience, the universe seems generally unwilling to give us back what it takes from us in death. Except now. Because when God raises Jesus from the dead, God does not simply restore life, but also creates once again, breaking the known laws of the existing universe and creating possibility for life beyond the grave. And so the women are afraid. They have no idea what to expect, no idea if there is anything left that they can count on, no idea what this God of light and renewal and redemption might do next. Fear and great joy. Perhaps that's just what we ought to feel any time we approach the God of resurrection. For we know not how we will be changed by God's presence, only that we will. We are changed forever by God's love. Stand with us and sing boldly. Jesus Christ is risen, is dead. Thank you.